Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans, the only daily podcast covering your favorite team, the New Orleans Pelicans, and NBA as a whole, available on iTunes, on Audioboom, wherever podcasts are found. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter. Excited to be with you all here on this Wednesday. As I record this, by the way, it is storming in the background as we are hoping not to flood here in New Orleans. But special edition of Locked On Pels today. We've got to go over the release of the Pelicans schedule. The season is getting close. It is getting very real. And this is kind of awesome because we got a lot to break down here. So we're going to cover this entirely in today's edition of Locked On Pelicans. Also want to talk about something over on Deadspin.com yesterday in the SB Nation article and just share my thoughts on that. Because I have a platform too. It's kind of cool. And that's kind of how it ties into everything about the SB Nation article and all of that. And I think it's important to touch on because it might hint at some future news coming from Locked On Pelicans and things in general as well. So we're just, well, I got some housekeeping I'm going to do just before we dive into the schedule and everything. But we've got a lot to cover today. I'm excited. So let's hit it. So before we jump into everything, there's some events coming up that you all need to know about, and the first two happen to do with the opening music that you hear every day in Locked On Pelicans, which is generously brought to you all by Vox and the Hound, local indie band down here that I've seen a few times, become friends with a couple of the guys here, and they're pretty awesome, and they're playing some shows, so want you guys to check those out. The first one is they're playing an acoustic show over at Peaches Records on Magazine Street near Napoleon, right by Miss Mays, on this coming Sunday, August 20th. So this Sunday, August 20th, going to be an acoustic show at Peaches Records on Magazine in the afternoon. I don't have the time in front of me. I feel bad. But look it up. I'll be there. It should be a lot of fun. Then they've got a big rock show coming up at One Eye Jacks on Saturday, August 26th, basically a week later. That's the big show. One Eye Jacks is pretty awesome. I've done, been there for a couple of events. I've helped host some stuff, kind of was a judge in something for Chris True a little while back. So that is a great place in the quarter. So make sure you check out both of those shows with Vox and the Hound. Then we've also got the New Orleans Basketball Hangout coming up, and this is kind of hosted by our buddy Chris True, who's been on the show a few different times here, and he, as you might know, is he runs and owns, I think, the New Movement Theater in the Bywater on St. Claude, and they've got a little bar they've put in there now, so it's a pretty cool place to hang out, a nice little courtyard patio area. That's coming up Thursday, August 24th, so next Thursday from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. We're actually going to be recording a live edition of Locked On Pelicans there. I'll bring people on over to come talk on there. We're going to have a lot of fun. Just kind of let's meet up, hang out, talk some hoops, especially now that the schedule's released. I know you all have burning questions about the Pelicans, and this is the best way. Come out and meet some people. It's a lot of fun as we get ready for the season. So again, Thursday, the 24th of August, 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., the New Orleans basketball hangout over at the New Movement's Rosewood Bar on St. Claude. The address is 2706 St. Claude Avenue in the Bywater. Should be a lot of fun. Make sure you come out. We'll do a couple different ones of these, different days, different times during the week till we figure out what really works, but I'm excited for the first one here. All right, so finally, schedule stuff, and this was released the other day, the 2017-2018 New Orleans Pelicans season schedule. And so first thing I want to say, I'm excited that they are on national TV 14 times, 6 on NBA TV, which might get scrapped, who knows, those can get moved a lot, but 2 on TNT, including one of them where it's going to be Boogie Cousins returning to Sacramento, and then 6 on ESPN, so you've got 8 right there, 14 total if you count the NBA TV games. That puts them, you know, right in the middle of the pack, more or less, when it comes to that. But cool to see them on TV. I remember a period of time when they just never were. And so, you know, it's an interesting thing. So the Pels, and this is the story you've probably been hearing so far, is that they're off to a bit of a rough stretch to start the season. We're 12 of the, or sorry, over their first 12 games, eight of them are on the road. And this is a team that's gotten off to two bad starts the past 2 years, and they really can't get off to another bad one. And these road games, even though they're against winnable opponents in theory, get you kind of scared, because the Pelicans have only won 22 road games the past two seasons combined. So an 11 a season. That's bad. Like, really, really bad. They open the season Wednesday, the 18th of October, at Memphis, who Memphis is still going to be a borderline playoff team. And then the home opener is going to be Friday versus Golden State, the 20th. That's on ESPN. Before they get on the road to the Lakers, Portland, Sacramento, then the next home game versus Cleveland on a Saturday, Orlando on a Monday, Minnesota on a Wednesday. And then you keep going through it, and then they're at Dallas, at Chicago, at Indiana, at Toronto. And it's that stretch, that opening period, is a little bit worrisome. But if you look at it, they should beat the Lakers. They should beat Sacramento. I'm not sold on Portland as a team, though that's a difficult trip. But playing at Dallas, at Chicago, at Indiana, they should win all of those games. That's right there, five. So all of a sudden, they have five very winnable games to start the year. And that's just on the road. Then you get Orlando at home. That's a winnable one. Factor in losses to Golden State and Cleveland, yeah. Of course, maybe on the road at Toronto, yeah. But then one of the other home games is going to be against Minnesota. And yeah, they have Jimmy Butler. They're a much improved team. But we've seen it takes a while to integrate guys into a system, and that teams that have a lot of turnover or add a big player, something like that, when they didn't have something like that before, kind of get out of the gate and struggle. You saw the Miami Heat do it when LeBron and Wade and Bosch all joined together down there. They struggled to start that season back in, 2010, I think it was. So it's not guaranteed that Minnesota is going to be a good team by them. So it's better to get them, right off of the bat and get that game out of the way than it would be to play them later in the season. So, yeah, these first 12 games are a little bit scary, but they are very, very winnable home games. Or not home games, road games. And if the Pels do come out and struggle and lose those very winnable games, that's where we might see some turnover right off the bat for the Pels. I can see a situation where Alvin Gentry does not last very long here in New Orleans if they get off to a rough start. But frankly, just looking at it, that really shouldn't be the case. That's, to start the year, really the biggest thing that jumps out to me. So some other odds and ends, I'm just going to kind of bounce all over the place when it comes to the schedule here, is they have three, and a lot of people are getting this wrong because of the way the schedule's broken up. They have three four-game road trips, one in November, we talked about it, Dallas, Chicago, Indiana, Toronto. Later in December, the 15th through the 23rd, at Denver, at Washington, at Orlando, at Miami. And then they also have one in February and March, which is where people are missing this, at San Antonio, at Dallas, at the Clippers, at Sacramento. Before they finish the season with a little mini three-game road trip before a final home game against San Antonio, where they're at Phoenix, at Golden State, and at the Clippers. Not, again, a four-game road trip, but still something to factor in there. But no road trip longer than four games. That's a nice thing to see. And, for the Pels, this is good. When you're in a weird spot where they used to be in the Eastern Conference, now in the West, can kind of reduce some travel time, give you some rest. Some other things to consider here, they have 18 games with a rest advantage, so they're more rested than the team they're playing. That's actually tied for sixth fewest in the league, so not a great number there. Games with a rest disadvantage, that's 26, and that's fourth most in the league. They travel about 50,000 miles, so what is that, around the Earth almost twice, essentially. And that's seventh most in the league. So travel and rest are going to be concerns for this team at times during the year. But the NBA has done a good job of trying to reduce it and make it a little bit better overall for this team. Or not this team, just the league in general, by eliminating, four games and five nights and other things, and trying to make it so that no longer do you see players resting in big marquee matchups just because of everything that's going on in the schedule and the travel, to avoid a situation like that. So yeah, those numbers don't look great, but they're still better than what they had been just league-wide in general prior to this. So I think it'll still be an okay situation for the Pelicans, despite having some of those kind of look worse than maybe what they really are. Another thing to keep an eye on with the schedule that everyone loves to look at is the back-to-backs. And look, I'm fully in the camp that it is a douchebag thing to say Sega Baba instead of second game of a back-to-back. I'm not going to do that here. It's freaking terrible, man. Just a pet peeve. It's just weird. Just say second game of a back-to-back. It's easier to see and understand. It makes no sense otherwise. Pels have 13 back-to-back games. That's tied for fewest number in the league. 14 is the most common. No team has more than 16. So they're on the lower end of that, which is a little bit nicer for them, I guess. But overall, I'm not too worried about all of this. It's more that rest disadvantage that you don't like to see. But they do have fewer back-to-backs in general, so that's just a good thing. So it kind of evens out a little bit when it comes to the schedule in the NBA as a whole. This year, Mardi Gras is a bit earlier as well. We got to factor that in when it comes to the Pelicans, of course. So obviously going to be no game on Tuesday, February 13th, though they do play away on the road at Detroit on Lundi Gras. Biggest thing from this is there's no Muses Thursday game this year. For the past 2 years, they played the Lakers 2 years ago and was Houston this past season, I believe. That was the opening game of the DeMarcus Cousins era where they got blown out. But no game on Muses Thursday. That's nice. That's a big conflict for a lot of people. And 2 years ago, I skipped it, even though it was one of Kobe's last games here in New Orleans. And then last year, I went and did the media thing, did a TV spot before, and then kind of left and went to go check out the parade, which is, you know, goes by down the street from there. So that was kind of cool, too. But no conflict, no traffic nightmare when it comes to that sort of thing. Though they will have a game that Wednesday, the 7th, which there are parades on, home against Indiana, Monday versus Utah on the 5th, no conflict there. And before that, that Friday and Saturday of early in February, the 2nd and 3rd, no real conflicts with parades whatsoever since they're going to be on the road. So for the most part, it's just going to be that Wednesday, the 7th, which conflicts with parades. That's a good thing overall. You know, don't try and divide your audience and make them choose whether it's going to a game or going to a parade. Or maybe they want to go to the game, but because of traffic and other issues, and it gets to be a disaster at times, depending on where you live, too. You get to avoid all of that this season, so I think that's a good thing as well. By the way, before I get to what is going to be the toughest part of the schedule, the easiest part of the schedule, and the overall strength of schedule, which we're going to talk about here today on Locked On Pelicans, I want to mention that today's edition of Locked On Pelicans is brought to you by SeatGeek. Especially, we got to bring it up when the Pelicans schedule comes out and is released and we're talking about it and you're trying to plan out your trips and your games and get your life kind of in order for basketball season. And SeatGeek is the best way to get tickets. It's the easiest way to get tickets. They are a ticket aggregator. What they're going to do is take tickets from all over the web, show them all to you, and show you the best prices for those tickets. Like, think like Kayak for airplanes or something like that. They're going to show you the best price, and then they're going to take it a step further and give you a grade and rating on those tickets to show you what's really, really good value. And not only that, it's super easy to make a purchase. All you have to do is get that SeatGeek app on your phone. Two or three taps from your phone later, you have tickets downloaded to it, and you can go right into games. As I've said on here, I've done that a ton this past season for Saints games. We'll be doing the exact same thing again for Saints games. And I've used SeatGeek for different things, whether it's bowl games, went to the Sugar Bowl down here with it. It's just the way that I get tickets, and I really have found it's the best way, as they say, to get in on the action. And for being a listener of Locked On Pelicans and part of the Locked On Podcast Network as a whole, they're running a promo for you to get some money back for making a purchase you were already going to make. So download the SeatGeek app today, go to settings, enter promo code, and put in the code LONBA. LONBA, five letters, and you're going to get $20 back on your first purchase. Hey, that's great. Free money. $20 rebate for a purchase you were already going to make. So download the SeatGeek app today, put in that promo code LONBA, and make sure you get in on the action that you want to see today. So looking back to the schedule here, there's two areas that I think might be the most difficult for the Pelicans. And that first one is going to be kind of partially through November and December, where all of a sudden they have games against Denver, at Oklahoma City, at Denver, home against Oklahoma City, San Antonio, at Phoenix, which is fine, then Golden State, Minnesota, Utah, Portland, Golden State again, and Denver again, going up to December 6th. That's a bit of a backbreaker, ballbuster, whatever you want to call it, that can be very difficult. But there's another spot, too, and that's going to be towards March, where all of a sudden they're playing the Wizards, and then a bunch of playoff teams right after in Utah, Charlotte less so, San Antonio, Houston, Boston, and then they close the month with road games at Houston and Cleveland while playing Portland in between those. That's not an easy stretch when all of a sudden, you know, most of March, if they can survive that period, look at the March schedule, just taking a look at it. Clippers, Wizards, Jazz, Hornets, Spurs, Rockets, then you got Boston all of a sudden in there, and the Celtics, Dallas again, Lakers. Lakers are fine. Then again, the Rockets, the Trailblazers, and the Cavs, even with or without Kyrie Irving. That's a brutal stretch. Luckily, a chunk of those, and most of them are home games, but still, that's against very good teams that are likely going to make the playoffs, you know, which can make things a little bit difficult for the Pelicans. If they can survive that stretch, they're going to be in very good shape. The easiest part of the schedule, as I lose my place here, is going to really be January. And they have home games against Detroit, Memphis, Chicago, Clippers, Sacramento. Clippers are really, and Memphis are really kind of the two ones there, but the Pels are at least on their level. On the road, they're at Memphis, and then the Knicks, Hawks, you can beat those teams as well. So that January schedule is pretty good and pretty kind to them, at least for part of it. You know, some of the more tougher games there is going to be going to Boston, at Utah as well. Minnesota still might be figuring things out, so that's an okay situation. It's really that second half of January where they can really make a run. And so overall, it keeps it kind of just in line with what you're expecting. It's a pretty even schedule for the Pels here. But January, definitely going to be the easiest period of time for the team. Hey, that's good. Go right into the All-Star break with some momentum. All right, I want to switch gears, though we're still talking about the schedule, but shift to strength of schedule. And I've seen a lot of stuff about this, and I don't think it's the most accurate way to do it. So one, strength of schedule is often based off of last season's numbers. So it's based off of the win-loss percentage or the Pythagorean expectation, which basically is a projection number, and whether, you know, how they were supposed to do. So you can look at the win-loss record of a team last year and apply it to the next season, and you eventually get a strength of schedule for each team. And again, teams change and shift. All of a sudden, Minnesota isn't going to be as bad as they were last season, and maybe Indiana's not going to be as good as they were. So these aren't necessarily just the most accurate things. So that's where I have an issue with it. But basically, according to the most common one used, Pelicans have the second toughest strength of schedule. Another thing to consider with this, bad teams don't play themselves. When you look at teams with a very high strength of schedule, it's because they're not factoring in their own bad record into that. So it kind of skews it where a good team, say the Warriors, is going to have an easier strength of schedule, usually because their win-loss record isn't put in, or not usually, it isn't put into that. So it doesn't skew it to be higher. Since they were a good team, you've taken out a better winning percentage. Does that make sense? It's going to be easier for it. So the Pels being a bad team last year, are obviously going to have a higher strength of schedule. So look at these rankings here as I read them off. Pelicans, second highest strength of schedule. First is Phoenix, bad team last year. Three, LA Lakers, bad team last year. Four, Dallas, bad team last year. See where I'm going with this? Five, Sacramento, bad team last year. Six was Denver, who missed the playoffs. Seven, Brooklyn. Brooklyn was a terrible team last year. Eight, Minnesota. Again, you guys see where this is going here. Also, Western Conference teams. Nine was Utah. Okay, a little bit different, but they made the playoffs. But still, you kind of get the idea that it generally skews a little bit towards worse teams because their records aren't factored in here. Yeah, the Eastern Conference in general has an easier strength of schedule because those teams didn't have as high win-loss records, even though they still made the playoffs. So that also skews it, but I wouldn't read too much into thinking the Pelicans are getting screwed with the second hardest strength of schedule while the Cavaliers actually have the easiest, and then you can look at Golden State Warriors, 26th. Some of the other teams, Boston has the 29th hardest strength of schedule. Again, Eastern teams and such, but those are good teams who aren't factoring in their records. And then again, the Eastern Conference teams don't have to play the Warriors as much, where you're only really going to get them twice instead of three or four times. That also skews it as well. So also, the Warriors just throw everything off. You know, funny story about that is I talk to some coaches at times with their use of analytics and numbers, and basically they say you have to throw out when you play the Warriors because of how it skews the stats and like opponent shooting percentage and opponent's point scores and different things. They throw those out as such big outliers they can't even kind of just factor it in, which I always thought is kind of interesting that it's just like, eh, whatever, let's move on. So going month by month, we can look at the Pelicans' strength of schedule just to get maybe a clearer idea of when they're going to have, you know, some trouble versus when they're not. October and November, they have the sixth toughest strength of schedule. December, it drops to 20th toughest, so it's getting better. In January, it jumps back up to 10th. Though, as we talked about, that's not, you know, necessarily the worst. February, it's, as we were talking about, being the easiest period of time here, 26th toughest before March jumps up to 4th, and then April jumps up to number 1. So overall, leads them to having the second toughest strength of schedule. Bigger concern is looking pre-All-Star game and post-All-Star game. And of course, this is not a midway point in the season. Last year, I think it was just 25 games post-All-Star break, but still. Pels actually have pre-All-Star game the 16th hardest, so right in the middle of the pack strength of schedule. And then post-All-Star break, the second, which really jumps them up as it's a heavily backloaded schedule. As we were just talking about in March and April, their strength of schedule being fourth and then first overall. So yeah, it skews it a little bit there. But like I said, don't read too much into strength of schedule when you're seeing some of these things, because it does not take into off-season changes or anything like that. And it doesn't factor in that the bad teams aren't playing themselves. So of course, their record's going to be, the overall cumulative record's going to be harder because they're not included in it. So I think that's a pretty fair assessment of the Pelicans' schedule on the early returns of it. We don't want to start making, you know, big sweeping judgments of it just yet. I will say, you know, based off of this, and again, I don't want to jump too much into the minutia of this and start predicting things, but it looks like they should have a winning record based off the team they have and the teams they're playing. You know, I could see 44 wins, a 44 and 38 record. I think they might be closer to 42 and 40 on the low end. I don't know if that gets you into the playoffs in the Western Conference, but I think I'm being a little more pessimistic on it, and I'll probably inch closer towards 44, maybe a little bit higher as we get closer to the season. That's kind of what you're projecting. Should be a winning record. I just don't know if it's going to be enough to get into the playoffs in that Western Conference, where you have about 8 teams fighting for the final 4 playoff seeds. So it's going to be tough, but we'll get closer to, you know, record projection and prediction, since we all got to make some as we get closer to the season and training camp and when we start to see everything coming through. I want to shift gears a little bit here. Kind of ranty, kind of not, but it's something I've been thinking a lot about over the past day, and that's the Deadspin article about SB Nation. And I'm not going to really dive into some specifics on this, as I don't work for SB Nation. I never have. I'm not affiliated with them, and I don't know the behind-the-scenes stuff so much to really pass judgment. But I want to talk about the working for free thing and whether you should or shouldn't, because I do get asked this a lot. And look, I don't think I'm really anyone all that important here in sports media or anything like that. People follow me. You guys all like to listen to the podcast and what I have to say in articles and on Twitter and here. And trust me, I appreciate that tremendously. And it is nice to get some money from it, even though it's not really a lot, let's say, to do this. But I got into this because it was just kind of a passion. I'll tell you the story that I've told a couple of people before, and this will lead into some other stuff here, where it was, you know, I worked in finance for a number of years, and, you know, I had, all of a sudden you have some income, which is good, you know, after college. And I decided to buy then Hornets season tickets. Being from Los Angeles and a huge basketball fan, seemed like a fun thing, and they were dirt cheap. Started going to games, just enjoyed it. I have a creative writing and English degree from Tulane. And so I decided I wanted to just write about the team. So I kind of emailed the dude, started this small site, got picked up by then Hornets 24/7, which of course was rebranded to bourbonstreetshots.com. And then kind of went from there. And no, it's not trying to make a career out of it. Though, yeah, I have looked into doing that at times, but just kind of do it on the side as an outlet. This means, you know, although my girlfriend loves basketball and loves sports, she doesn't have to hear me incessantly talking about it, because I have this outlet to do it here, which I think is a good compromise all around. Just happy home life, right? And so it's interesting. And, you know, I never really expected money from Bourbon Street Shots. And we've all gone through periods of times over on that site where maybe one person was doing more work than others and everyone was cool with it. But we were all just working kind of towards this common thing because we enjoyed it. And we were passionate about what we were building. And we kind of turned bourbonstreetshots.com into, you know, the leader when it comes to Pelicans coverage. I don't think that's wrong necessarily to say, especially as local media, you know, pre-Scott Kushner here, you know, lagged behind at times. I don't think they're as bad as people make them out to be. Kushner definitely elevated that. Scott, if you're listening, there you go. There's your plug for today. So it's an overall interesting thing. The concept is working towards, you know, if you're not getting paid, are you getting something out of it? And for me, it certainly was the case. And it's led to being able to do some pretty cool things. I get to host this podcast now because I plugged away at this for years, got better, you know, learned more about basketball in a way to talk about it in a way that people understand. That's led to me being all over the radio here in Louisiana at times. You guys see me on TV at times too. Heck, now I get stopped by like random people asking me if I'm Jake Madison with Bourbon Street Shots with Locked On Pelicans. They tell me how much they listen and how much, you know, this stuff matters to them and they enjoy my insight and everything. And that's a cool feeling. It is rewarding. There's ways to have stuff coming back to you without it being about money. So I think it all just kind of depends on what your expectations are, you know, with it all. But look, the sports media industry is just brutal right now. And I think that's media in general. But if you can't get out there and have a platform for your voice to be heard, I do think that is important and something that is a takeaway for the person writing, even if it's for free, you might not have that opportunity to do it. And certainly there'd be almost no opportunities for new people to break into this without these kind of free, unpaid, just kind of hobby gigs that they do. And that's what I consider myself, even though I do this and a number of other things with it. So, you know, it just depends on what your end game is. If you just want to talk about Pelicans because you're a passionate fan, shoot, this is perfect for you guys to do. Yeah, there is an issue with diversity, and this is the best argument for why we need to talk about this. I saw on Twitter was basically it means people who are financially viable really only have a chance to do this. You know, when I was working at the bank and in finance and different things, I was sometimes spending 20 hours a week on Bourbon Street Shots in addition to working there, you know, close to like 50 plus hours a week. Not everyone can spend 20 hours a week on a passion hobby or anything like that because you got to go out and make money. And so I was able to do it because I was okay. I was going to be able to put food on my table at the end of the day. But there are people who aren't able to do that by spending 20 hours, you know, a week or more or less doing things. So that's an issue that it's kind of creates a high barrier that only certain people are able to really get into. And yeah, from that aspect, it's kind of unfair. But to me, it was always worth it just because I enjoy doing this. Yeah, I like the notoriety that comes with it to a little bit. I enjoy being on TV and being able to kind of influence people, if that makes sense. You know, a lot of people, media and otherwise, text me asking me questions about the team. And I'm able to kind of push the correct, or my opinion of the correct information out there. You know, hopefully correct other people's opinions. And I think that's worth it to me alone as well. So, you know, there's various ways why you get into this, why you would want to do this. And it's not just about getting paid to me. And look, when it comes to a site like SB Nation, you know, that's part of Vox Media, that's valued at $1 billion. Yeah, you know, they have money and they're probably not giving it out to those sites like they should. But Vox Media, probably SB Nation isn't their very real profitable part. They probably have other things that are making them worth $1 billion. And look, you guys, and this is what the flack we get, you know, Mason gets it, I get it, other people get it, is like there really isn't a lot of money in sports media. You try and start a sports blog and you think you're going to monetize it and you're going to put stuff on there. Man, you're going to be disappointed. When you hear the term clickbait, and this is where I'm going to start ranting a little bit probably, that's not accurate because frankly, most advertisers aren't paying per click on the site. That's it's usually the going thing is per 1,000 impressions. And that's cool. You got like a banner ad on the site and 1,000 people are reading that article. Per 1,000, you get paid a certain amount. That's rare now. You don't really see that because it's given rise to clickbaity articles that aren't actually having people engage with the sponsors. It's usually an amount per click or per 100 clicks or per 1,000 clicks on the actual ad. So when you see an advertisement or a pop-up or something, that site's probably not getting paid unless you're clicking on that and getting redirected to the advertiser's site or something like that. Think about how often you do that on purpose, not accidentally click on it and it took me somewhere else. Not much, right? So most of these sites aren't making a lot of money, even with their clickbaity articles. SB Nation sounds like they were doing it, and I think we've seen this to be true at times, because they have internal guys that are putting pressure on these people, being like, if you don't get quotas or numbers up and stuff like that, we're going to fire you and just bring someone else in who will do that. That type of stuff is shitty and I hate. And I worked at a job in the past where they've done that a little bit, where you get your like scorecard for the day and it's just circled in red and they're like, this isn't good. You got to help people out and help them grow. But anyway, most of how people think the media works and get paid on really isn't the case. It's not per click or anything like that. So just keep that in mind when it comes to all this. And I say this because there's probably going to be an announcement or two in the next coming weeks, let's just say. That's all I can leave it at that right now, where there might be a need for people. So it's up to you whether or not you really want to consider doing this. And the ASB Nation article I didn't think was truly fair because it's kind of painting them in a bad light for something that just is the general practice in this industry. And yeah, people can run with it and do something else. And yeah, working for free a little bit, especially if it's in your spare time or something, can be rewarding. You get other perks. I get a media credential. I get to talk to players. I'm out there by the court and everything. And it's allowed me to, you know, end up doing this podcast, which I love doing. And I love spending every day talking Pelicans with you guys, at least during the season. So that's all. I'm going to stop ranting about this because I don't think it's much fun anymore for you guys. So before I go today, I have forgotten to mention Pels showed off their new uniforms last week with Nike. They fixed the font size on New Orleans on the front for the white and the blue uniforms, where it's just bigger and not too small, where it looked terrible at times. The one concern I've seen is that the gap between New and Orleans is too small, making it look like one word. I think that's really just the angle and waviness of the jerseys. Is they're not on models or anything like that. I think it'll look fine on players. Not too worried about it. Good fix. Does sound like the reds are still going to be there, which are, I think, most people's favorite uniforms, the red alternates. And it sounds like the Mardi Gras ones, the purple, should still be there. Hopefully no sleeves, though we don't really know what's going on with that just yet. I'm sure those are going to be released at a later date and time as it kind of builds excitement that way. But good fix by Nike for the Pelicans uniforms. Kind of what we were expecting. No surprise there. Don't really need to dive into it very much. So that's going to do it for this edition of Locked On Pelicans. Like I said, talking about the schedule, I think it's about fair and about right. I think you're still looking at, you know, a winning record with this team. You know, keep in mind, certain parts are going to be easier. February, January look much better than the end of the season. Don't worry too much about those 12 games, you know, 8 on the road out of 12 to start. I think those are winnable games, and you can come out of there with a 500 record. I don't think they're going to fire Gentry if he's around 500 after the first month. I think it's going to really be if all of a sudden they're well below 500 when you might start to see some changes. But hey, I think this is right. Now we know the season. We can start game planning. We'll break it down probably tomorrow, where I'm going to touch on some really exciting and key games. And it should be a lot of fun. This means the NBA is coming soon, so I am excited. So like I said, to open the podcast, by the way, those couple of events, check out Vox and the Hound. Don't forget about the New Orleans basketball hangout at the New Movement Theater on August 24th. Don't forget, please, also, make sure you're subscribed to social media for Locked On Pelicans. Like it on Facebook. Just search Locked On Pelicans. Follow it on Twitter. It's at Locked On Pels. These are going to start becoming much more active. Get in on it now. Make sure you're there. And please, if you get a chance, rate it on iTunes, 5 stars. All of this does matter, and keep this free for you guys 5 days a week. No paywall, anything like that. So I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter. Thank you all for listening today. I'll be back with you all next time.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa auto parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.